Without hesitation, I charge towards the general, pitching fireballs at him as I go. He absorbs each of them. Huge chunks of his uniform burn away. But I don't seem to be doing any damage to the armor underneath. Not letting any pain register on his face, the general rushes right for me, like he's going to barrel into me. He probably weighs a solid 200 pounds more than me with that armor. But screw it. We crash together and the wind goes out of me, but I manage to stay upright. I press my hand, still engulfed by the flames of my lumen, against the side of the general's face. He lets out a grunt of pain, but that's his only reaction to me burning his face, his pale skin searing black and popping. Both of his hands wrap around my throat, big enough that his fingers overlap at the back of my neck. He squeezes my neck, and immediately dark spots form in my vision. I can't breathe. With a hand not burning the side of the general's face, I pry at his fingers. I feel like my throat will completely collapse if I let his grip get any tighter. It's hard to concentrate with him choking me. But I manage to keep up the intensity of my lumen while simultaneously using my telekinesis. I maneuver my dagger out from beneath my pant leg. Without a free hand, I gather as much telekinetic force as I can muster and send the blade lancing towards the general's heart. My dagger deflects off his armor. Before I can stab at him again, he tightens his grip on my throat, and I lose control of my telekinesis. Feeling faint, it's all I can do to keep my lumen burning against the side of his face.
"Who do you think will die first, boy?"
The general sneers, smoke from his own burned face spilling out of his mouth when he speaks. I try to backpedal to break away from him, but he puts all his weight down, forcing me to my knees. Suddenly, a Mogadorian sword is thrust towards my face. Unable to move my head, I can only flinch backwards. The tip of the glowing blade stops just short of my eye. The general's grip slackens, and then drops away entirely. I fall onto my side, gasping for breath, trying to figure out what just happened.
"Through the back. Isn't that how you do it, father?"
Adam holds the general's broad sword in two hands. It's almost too heavy for him, and yanks it out of his father's back. He drove it straight through the general's chest, the glowing blade piercing that Mogadorian armor as if it were made of tinfoil. I was too busy fighting for my life to notice the force field come down. Luckily, the general was too. He stares at Adam, stunned. The general must realize his mistake. All the Mogs know the voice command to bring down the force field, but one of them wasn't fighting on his side. The general gropes at the wound on his chest, and for a moment, I think he's going to keep coming. But then he staggers, reaching out to grasp at Adam, almost as if he wants to hug him, or maybe strangle him. It's hard to tell. Adam steps aside, a detached look on his face, and allows the general to fall face first onto the pavement. Beyond the court, the fighting is over. The Mogadorian's all dead. Back in Adam's front yard, Sam kneels over a wounded chimera. Malcolm stands a few feet off from us, on the sideline, watching the scene with the general, a look of concern on his face. I pick myself up and stand next to Adam. "Adam, are you?" My voice is hoarse, throat raw and sore. Adam holds up a hand, cutting me off.
"Look,"
he says flatly. At our feet, the general begins to disintegrate. It doesn't happen quickly like I've seen with the many Vatborn scouts and warriors I've killed. The general decomposes slowly, parts of him flattening out faster than others. In some spots, his flesh melts away, but not the bone beneath, leaving a skeletal elbow jutting up from the ground next to a ribcage, all attached to a half-disintegrated skull.
"You can see where Cetricus Ra augmented him,"
Adam says, his voice almost clinical as he explains.
Healed wounds, cured diseases, improved his strength and speed. He promised immortality. But the unnatural parts disintegrate, like the Vatborn. The rest? What's left? That is trueborn, real flesh.
We don't have to get into this now, I managed to say, still trying to catch my breath. It's not that I don't appreciate the information. It's just that Adam's dad is lying dead at our feet and he's giving a lesson in Mogadorian genetics, like nothing happened.
They're too far gone to realize it. But this is the fate Cetricus Ra offers my people. Ashes and spare parts,
Adam says, staring at his father's remains.
I wonder how much more would be left if the great leader had never poisoned his body and mind.
Adam lets go of the sword, and it thunks heavily to the ground. I put my hand on his shoulder. The revulsion I felt for him over the last couple of days? Forgotten. He just saved my life, and killed his own father to do it. Adam, it's okay. I start, not really sure what to say in this crazy situation.
I hated him,
he replies, not looking at me. He stares at the burned uniform, piles of ash and random bones that used to be the general.
But he was my father. I wish things could have ended differently, for all of us.
I crouch down over the general's remains and carefully remove the simple, black leather sheath that he wore across his back. It's a little singed, but still holding together. I pick up the sword from where Adam dropped it, sheath it, and hold it out to him.
I don't want that,
Adam says, staring at the sword with a look of disgust. Things can end differently, I tell him. Use this in a way that your father never did. Help us win this war and change the fate of both our people. Adam hesitates for a moment before accepting the sword from me. He holds the blade in both hands and stares down at it. After a long moment of contemplation, Adam slings the sheath over his shoulder. He grunts at the weight but manages to stand up straight.
Thank you, John, he says quietly. I swear to you, this blade will never again be used against Alaric.
Sam walks over to us. You guys all right? Adam nods. I touch the skin of my throat, which already feels swollen and puffy from where the general strangled me. Yeah, I'm good, I reply, then look to Adam. Are we done, though? Or are there more coming?
He shakes his head. I shut down communications right before the general caught up with me. There won't be any reinforcements.
Nice, Sam replies, looking out at the empty windows of Ashwood Estates. So we just took over a Mogadorian base? Before I can bask in any sense of accomplishment, I notice a dark look on Adam's face. He's no longer staring down at his father. Instead, his eyes are turned towards the horizon, like he's expecting to see something bad headed our way at any moment. What is it? I ask him.
There was something else, he says slowly, choosing his words carefully. I was only on the communications network for a few moments, but I picked up some chatter. Troop movements. Mass relocations of Trueborn to the West Virginia fortress. Deployments of warrior groups to population centers.
Whoa, whoa, I say, holding up my hands. What does all that mean?
Invasion, Adam replies. Invasion is imminent.
Chapter 10. Cetricus Ra has some of his minions stick me in a cold room without any windows. No more polite conversations over nasty dinners, I guess. It's so small in here that I can stand at the center, stretch out my arms, and almost brush the opposing walls with my fingertips. There's a little dome-shaped protrusion in the middle of the ceiling. I bet it's a camera. Against one wall is a small metal desk, with a chair that looks like it's designed for maximum discomfort. On the desk is a copy of the Great Book of Mogadorian Progress. I'm supposed to sit here and study my grandfather's masterwork, read 3 sections, and spend at least 20 minutes in deep contemplation of each. No thanks. I'm not sure if it's the same copy I used to hit that Mogadorian lady on my first day here. There are a lot of these books lying around the Anubis. It's like the only thing the Mogs read. Anyway, they've chained this one to the desk to make sure I don't turn it into a weapon. Instead of studying, I lean against the wall farthest from the desk and wait for the Mogs to run out of patience. I try to ignore the itching sensation coming from the Mogadorian charm freshly burned into my ankle. If they're watching me, and I'm almost certain that they're always watching me, I don't want them to see me looking uncomfortable. I definitely don't want them to know how disgusted I am at the idea of being connected to Cetricus Ra. The Mogs hate the Lorik, but they fall over themselves to please their beloved leader, even though he used to be one of us. Based on what he told me at dinner, Cetricus Ra turned himself into some freakish hybrid species made from the powerful legacies of an elder and the technological advancements of the Mogs. Or so he says. It's hard to figure out what's fact and fiction with him. Whatever he is now, Lorik, Moog, or something in between, Cetricus Ra has spent centuries making the Mogs view him as a savior, as a god. Where he came from doesn't matter to them anymore. And even though I get a few sideways looks from some of the soldiers above the Anubis, to most of the crew, I'm on Cetricus Ra's level. I'm the granddaughter of a self-proclaimed god. So far, that's keeping me safe. As if being blood relatives wasn't enough, now we're bonded by his version of a Lorik charm. I remember feeling left out when I discovered all the other guard were connected in the same way, all of them once protected by the same force. I wanted to be part of that. Now, I've got 2 thick and jagged bands of scar tissue around my ankle. Be careful what you wish for, Ella. I'm zoning out, trying to think up a way to test what the charm does without hurting myself, when a noise starts playing in the room. It sounds almost exactly like a smoke alarm. At first, it's like a ringing in my ears, but seconds later, it's amplified enough that it drowns out my thoughts. I cover my ears, but the sound only gets louder. It's coming through the walls from every direction at once. "Turn it off!" I yell to the Mogs I'm sure are watching me. In response, the volume increases. My head feels like it might split open. I stumble away from the wall, and the volume immediately lowers from a deafening shriek to a piercing whistle. When I take another step towards the great book, the volume drops another fraction. I get the hint. When I finally open up the book, the noise drops to an annoying buzz. So that's how Cetricus Ra intends to educate me, by making it so the only piece I can find is literally in the pages of his Mogadorian encyclopedia. Maybe I should try to make the most of this. There might be some information I can use against him in Cetricus Ra's painfully boring book. It can't hurt to skim a little. There's no way I'll ever believe any of the lies on these pages. The ringing cuts off entirely when I start to read the first page. Even though I resent it, I can't help but let out a little sigh of relief. There is no greater achievement for a species than the shouldering of one's own genetic destiny. It is for that reason that the Mogadorian race must be considered the most elevated of all life throughout the universe. Ugh, I can't believe this thing goes on for like 500 pages, or that it's become required reading for an entire species. I'm not going to find anything useful in here. As soon as my eyes drift away from the page, the heinous buzzing resumes, more intense than before. I grit my teeth and look back at the book, skimming over a couple more sentences until something occurs to me. I grab the top of the first 30 pages or so and tear them out of the bindings. The piercing noise in my ears reaches siren level, my eyes watering, but I force myself to go on. I hold up the pages so that whichever Mogadorian is watching can see, and then I tear them down the middle. Then I tear them into fourths, smaller and smaller, until I've got two handfuls of great book confetti to toss into the air. "How am I supposed to read it now?" I shout. The wailing goes on for another couple of minutes. It gets to the point where my neck and back start to ache from the way my shoulders are bunched up, like they're trying to cover my ears. I continue tearing more pages out of the book. I can't even hear the paper ripping. And then, all of a sudden, the noise stops. The bones in my face, my teeth, everything hurts. But I've beaten them, and the silence in that tiny, uncomfortable room is the best I've ever experienced. My reward is a couple of hours of alone time. Not that I can even really tell how much time is passing. I sit on the edge of the uncomfortable chair, rest my head on the desk, and try to nap. My thoughts sound louder in my head than they should, and the ringing in my ears won't let me sleep. That, and the feeling that I'm being watched. When I open my eyes, it feels like the room has actually gotten smaller. I know it's just my imagination, but I'm starting to freak out a little. My ankle is itching like crazy. I pull up the hem of my dark Mogadorian gown, a fresh one, not the one Cetricus Ra burned, and stare at the raw flesh on my leg. I'm failing at my goal of giving nothing away, but I can't help myself. I reach down and massage my ankle, letting out a deep sigh as I do. I press my palm against the brand and wish that the scar will be gone when I lift my hand. Of course, it's still there, but at least the clammy sweat on my palm actually feels sort of good against the seared flesh. Something occurs to me then. What if I use my Eternus to return to a younger age? Would the skin on my ankle heal? I decide to try it. I close my eyes and picture myself as I was 2 years ago. The feeling of getting smaller is like letting out a held breath. At least this time, when I open my eyes, the room seems to have gotten bigger. I look down at myself. I've shrunk down a few inches, made myself skinnier. The muscles had started developing over the last few months smoothed away. And yet, the jagged Mogadorian symbol on my leg remains, pink and achy as ever.
"Eternus, we have that in common."
It's Cetricus Ra. He stands in the now open doorway of my little study room, still in that infuriatingly plastic human form. He observes me with a casual smile, leaning against the door, his arms folded across his chest. "It's useless," I reply bitterly, covering up my ankle. I close my eyes and ease back into my true age. "What I get for being related to you, the dumbest legacy of all."
"You won't feel that way when you're my age,"
Cetricus Ross says, ignoring my insult.
"You will be young and beautiful forever if you wish. It will be an inspiration to your subjects to see their leader radiant and ageless."
"I don't have any subjects."
"Not yet, but soon."
I know exactly who Cetricus Ra means for me to lord over, but I refuse to acknowledge it. I regret using my Eternus.
Now he knows something.